It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And welcome into Poke the Bear, episode 139, presented by FanDuel. I am Evan Marinofsky. That is Connor Ryan. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. You must be elated. The BU Terriers. Big win over Western Michigan in the first round. On to the second round today, when listeners hear this, on Saturday against Cornell, which...
Whatever. Bunch of Andy Vinod's, bunch of losers. No, I'm doubling down, Evan. Ever since I was fretting all last week when I was declaring BU was going to win the hockey championship. Of course they did. Sorry, Merrimack. Shoot. Get out of the way. So I'm doubling down. Yeah, going to the Frozen Four. Like I'm not having a bunch of Ivy Leaguers in Cornell stop this train. So I'm rolling with it. Like, what's the worst that can happen? What's the worst that can happen?
Can't be worse than that year a few years ago, 2015. Can't be worse than that. Can't be worse than that. It can't be worse than that. It can't.
They didn't play that year. Frozen Four is canceled. All the ice melted. So they were just like, BU, like, we won't give any trophies. We feel bad for everyone else, but like BU, like, we'll give you the trophy afterwards. So
on home
they didn't play
too.
A game. It's too bad.
Yeah, unfortunate about that. But, I mean, BU is looking great. They were my preseason pick. BU, and I think it was Minnesota, I said, would meet in the national championship game. I don't remember who I picked to win, but that was who I picked to be in there. I thought BU was super underrated going into the year, at least nationally. That was the big thing. Locally, they were, I think, first or second in the Hockey East coaches poll preseason. But nationally, I think they were not getting the love I thought that they deserved, the roster of seniors, which is weird for a BU team to have. But exciting action. I love this time of year because the NCAA hockey tournament alongside the NCAA basketball tournament, pretty great, Connor. It's like chef's kiss. It's beautiful. Speaking of beautiful things, Boston-Montreal Thursday night. We'll get to the schedule in a second about how this happens, about how we never see Montreal anymore. We don't see Toronto anymore. We don't see any teams we actually give a shit about anymore. But we'll get to that in a second. Montreal. It was kind of a vintage Boston-Montreal game. Montreal, you know, I know they're last place in the Atlantic. Very young team.
Not good.
Definitely going to be good in the next, like, 5 years. You know, Suzuki and their guys like that who are terrific players. But right now, not so great. But there was some heat. There was some heat in this game, and it started with good old Rem Pitlick, who kind of did the old thing where, like, for those of you like me who play NHL 23, when you go to pre-hit someone, like, you think they're going to get the puck, so you already start to hit them. That's kind of like what he did with Patrice Bergeron, except I don't know how he thought the puck was going to Bergeron. Bergeron was just kind of, like, in the vicinity but did not have the puck whatsoever. It was clear as day to anybody there. And Pitlick just drops him. And credit to Brad Marchand, who, you know, Jack Edwards gave heaping praise to on the broadcast. Marchand did some self-policing, took Pitlick down. Infamous all-time photo already of Marchand beating the bag out of Rem Pitlick. Which, by the way, the last time there was a Boston player in a picture like that, where over a rival punching him, was Joe Kelly in 2018. And what did the Red Sox go on to do in 2018, Connor? Ooh, ooh. So the everything's just adding up at this point for your Bruins. I mean, geez.
I mean, I thought you were going to say that the last picture like that was when David Krejci was punching Joe Pavelski and smiling that like a lunatic. However, that was 2020. We know what happened then. So let's hope that does not happen.
Yes, let's steer clear of that.
But yeah, no, I think you look at a kind of a vintage Montreal game in terms of just the natural kind of hostility. Again, that's also a young Montreal team, doesn't have a lot to play for right now. Of course, they're going to be kind of mucking it up, and you saw that quite a bit in that game. But as I said, I think the encouraging thing out of, you know, beyond just the win and stringing together another victory and having be five wins in a row now, even when the Bruins probably weren't playing at their best in that game, there wasn't really a dominant effort against a team that you should probably put on the ropes pretty early.
It looked
early,
like it was going that way in the beginning of the game when it was 2-0. It's like, oh, this is going to be like a vintage 2011 Montreal spanking where you beat them like 7-0. But right, obviously exactly. It didn't turn out that way.
Yeah. But as you said, I think it's encouraging to see guys like Marchand. Obviously, like, I don't think anyone would question that in terms of Marchand stepping in there and taking down someone who hits Bergeron late. But I think it's one of those things where every year, I think when you're stuck going through the checklist of what you want in a potential Stanley Cup championship team, you know, whether it's cohesion, chemistry, good goaltending, good defense, all this stuff. Obviously, the Bruins still have to work out their power play, especially. But one thing I don't think people are really fretting about is the collective, I think, buy-in or the, you know, not great. We don't want to talk about that because I feel like you can go down the rabbit hole in terms of that. But this is a team that very much has accountability for one another and will step to and will respond when things get physical. And it's not just Marchand, obviously, but you look at guys like Frederick, Foligno, if he gets back in the lineup, Hathaway, you know, Tyler Bertuzzi. There's so many guys up and down the lineup that, you know, can either drop a guy with a hit, but especially can respond when things kind of get nasty. And that's
McAvoy.
Yeah, McAvoy. Yeah. I mean, there's so many guys on there that can step to and answer the call if needed. You know, even like Nosek's not a fighter, but like there's been multiple times where he's come up to your defended teammate, hasn't always gone well. Usually he's been like punched in the face repeatedly. But again, it shows you kind of the player he is as well. So when you go through the playoffs and whether it's, you know, a team like Tampa and the decor that they have or other matchups along the way, you're going to have to need some of that pushback and that aggression. That's something that even Brendan Marchand talked a little bit about before Thursday's game. You know, he pretty much had like a 15-minute state of the NHL address with the media at Warrior and talked about a lot of things, but one of them was the fact that they're banning fighting in the queue going forward. And he said it's not just the fact there's the entertainment factor, and you know, it's not like the NHL is how it was 10 years ago where you have pretty much a fight per game, but you need that physicality or that, you know, ability to respond so the guys aren't running you or guys aren't taking liberties against your star players. So I think that game against Montreal was a good example of why it's still valued that you have multiple guys that will stand to and defend a team. I mean, hell, I think Jeremy Swayman, I think, probably watched that Binnington Fleury almost fight. It was like, I need to be if Linus is getting empty net goals, I have to do something to join in on the highlight reels. So again, he almost had an empty netter. That was almost a chaotic last minute where like I think
twice. The crowd was
he's trying. Like I gave him all the credit in the world for trying that, but if he's not gonna do that, he at least has to be like, well, you know, I got to get on the highlight reel. Like, I got to punch some goalie, right? So
it's an arms race with him and Linus Olmark at this point. It's also, it's annoying because Montreal, you know, I tweeted the picture of Swayman basically being all alone to shoot the puck. The annoying part though was like the Canadians like set up a wall at the blue line. They're like, we suck, but we are not going to be the team that gets scored on again this year by a Bruins goal. Like, we are not going to let this. I think it was Ben Chiarot at center ice kind of blocked it down. It just stood like in the middle. Like, no, we're not. We're not going to stand here for this. This is not happening to us, which like, I guess credit to them, but come on, have a little fun. You're in last place. You know, let things happen.
Marty St. Louis just jumps off the bench and just deflects the puck. Like, it's like, no, we can't have this happen to this franchise.
This cannot happen to us. But it's an interesting thing you hit on with the team toughness. You know, we, for a long time, we're big advocates of, hey, you cannot acquire someone because they're really tough. You know, the Lucic's of the world, they're fun, great memories, but it's hard to give a roster spot to that or a lineup spot to that. You need guys who can play too, who can add some speed, who can add some skill, can bring something to the table other than dropping the gloves or being intimidating. We talked about this a lot over the years, and the Bruins always tried to get that Tom Wilson-esque player. They thought Nick Ritchie might be that. He wasn't. Matt Bolesky, David Backes. They tried really hard to kind of replicate that kind of player, and it never really worked because they just the game passed them by. Nick Ritchie just really wasn't that good. And, you know, Nick Ritchie is the moon, never forget. But, you know, again, I think it's a very good testament to this team that this team has guys, as Ty Anderson has said before, you know, not to, I mean this in the best possible way, are kind of shitheads. And that's a good thing. And that's not meant to be a bad thing. You're Garnet Hathaways of the world. Tyler Bertuzzi, you know, Tyler Bertuzzi, obviously a much different player, but can add that toughness. So again, you know, last night, Bergeron gets, you know, shoulder to the head for no reason in his own place. He's the captain. Marchand stands up to him, but Garnet Hathaway could have stood up to him. Tyler Bertuzzi could have. Trent Frederick, you know, you can go down the list of guys that could have stepped up and done something, and, you know, made life difficult on Montreal in return. And they did. And they did. I mean, you saw Jake Evans got into it with Charlie McAvoy a number of times. So again, I think it's a good thing. It's a very good thing that this team has that. Again, is that going to win them a playoff series completely? No, but it's a really good thing to have. As you said, if you go against a team like the Lightning, or if you get, you know, I mean, it used to be Washington, but now again, Hathaway is not on that team anymore. It's not as, I guess, as big a thing, but no matter who you get, you have that element to your game and it just makes you more complete. And I think that's a very good thing. But again, I know we, you know, you and I are not huge into the, oh, we got to, you know, the Bruins tough or not. Like, are they getting a big guy? But that, this isn't that. This is not that in any way, shape, or form. One thing we are also in agreement on, the NHL schedule makers. Oof. Oof. The Roblox sound. Oof. Again, the fact that it was March 23rd and it was Montreal's first trip to Boston this season is ridiculous. Ridiculous. And this, you know, the fact that you get to see Toronto, what, three times a year, Montreal three times. I mean, stupid. It's stupid. Now, again, don't go back to, you know, 2021 where you're seeing, you know, the same seven teams seven times a year, whatever that was.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least give fans like five or six Canadians Maple Leafs games. I mean, this is so stupid to me.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, again, you're probably facing an uphill climb in terms of actually getting the schedule to augment itself, where you are getting a better mix of divisional opponents, because teams like Arizona, they want the Bruins there. It's like, you know, same with like McDavid, you want him every year as well for at least one game. So I get the rationale behind it. But yeah, as you said, I even like just the way the schedule is set up, that you're having so few of these matchups, but like Montreal, your first meeting is the very end of March. Like, we are in the dog days of the season, Evan. Like, we are for the playoffs to get underway. Even like Toronto, like when they're going to play Toronto again, like, you know, it takes them forever to actually get started in the regular season. And then by the time we get to whenever they play next week or the week after that, like, both of those teams are probably, I mean, they're both going to be clinched a playoff spot by then. Like, you're getting to the point now where even these marquee matchups down the end of the regular season are more just like, you know, walkthroughs, or, you know, just like,
was it last year the Bruins played the Leafs in the last game of the season? It was last year, right?
And no one played. It's one of those things where
it was the Chris Wagner game.
Yes, exactly. So like, it's one of those ones where those aren't really measuring stick games anymore. It's like, you're going to put all these like highly real, like, you want to play the Blue Jackets or some of these other teams in April, like, go for it. But I think when you have these games that you automatically circle on the calendar, you know, like Montreal, even though Montreal, the Bruins and the Canadians are separated by 27 wins. Like, and I don't think people were expecting Montreal to be good this year. You still have that game in the middle of the season when there's a lot more stakes involved. Same with Toronto, with you'd rather them when they're probably not so separated in the standings in October and November, right? Like, you look at just how many of the games against Toronto the Bruins are going to face this year beyond what they could, you know, meet in the playoffs. You had that one game up in Toronto where a lot was going on for the Bruins, right?
One big thing was happening, yes.
Yeah, and then you have this one coming up where, again, like, I don't know how much stock you put into it, right? I think we're going to touch on that in a little bit in terms of some of these bigger matchups over the last 3.5 weeks of the season, but still, like, the significance is kind of lessened or watered down a little bit when you get to this point of the year where I think a lot more teams are looking at rest and getting guys healthy and you know, focus on your own details as opposed to what you're matching up against. So, it's just the NHL dropping the ball here. I mean, the fact that we're literally in the final weeks of the season, it's the first time Montreal comes to town. And again, it shows you that for some of these rivalries, some of these matchups, doesn't matter where they are in the standings, it still makes for prime time entertainment when they face off against each other. Like, that was not a vintage, but that harkens back to why I think Boston Montreal does have that extra bit of juice in terms of when they do match up, regardless of where they are in terms of, you know, the health of their franchises.
It goes to show, like, you know, Bruins Toronto has been the strong rivalry the past, you know, 5-6 years. But you go back to, I don't know, the late 2000s, early 2010s, when the Leafs were not good. Those were not rival games. I mean, those just were whatever. You were playing it. It's playing like the Senators. I mean, it was no different. The only reason the Bruins and the Leafs, at least right now, have this strong rivalry is because they meet in the playoffs so much. You take that out, there's not a lot of juice to that. I know the two historic original six teams, but the juice is not there like it is with Boston Montreal, like it always has been. Now, maybe the schedule makers thought, you know, hey, Bruins are going to play Carolina at the end of March. Could be a fight for playoff positioning or this or that. Like, maybe they thought that. Obviously, it isn't the case, which we'll get to in a second. Anyways, so this upcoming weekend, two big games, Tampa and Carolina, of course, a back-to-back. Again, the NHL schedule makers strike again, which is so much fun. Get the old Saturday matinee and then the weird Sunday game, you know, not ideal. But, you know, I think a big question, you know, when the Bruins were struggling a few weeks ago, a lot of people, you know, were saying, hey, you know, if this was coming against really good teams, it'd be a problem. It's coming against bad teams, you know, they're just not getting up for the games. And clearly it turned out to be the case. The Bruins turned it around. They're on, a five-game win streak now. You know, count the win streaks on two hands this year. I mean, geez. But how much stock are you putting into these games?
Yeah, it's kind of a fine line you have to kind of navigate there, because I think for the Bruins, you'd like to see them post more complete showings just to show that they can rise to the challenge. I think you saw that at the start of this win streak, right? You lose pretty bad games against Detroit and especially Chicago, and you're like, all right, this isn't that great. But again, I think when we talked about that mini losing streak they had, it was like, all right, let's see how they respond to a desperate Winnipeg team, seeing in Minnesota that was, I think, the hottest team in the NHL at that time. Like how do they do against games like that? The same with like Buffalo, that was, again, they were on the down slide, but still in that playoff picture, you know, the second leg of a back-to-back, and they smoked those teams, right?
Like,
that
was like, nothing. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one of those situations where you're like, okay, this team, you know, can rise to the challenge and take care of these teams. Like, I don't know how much we should be really hinging on how they do against the Chicagos or even the Montreals in terms of the bigger picture of how, you know, much that previews what this team could be in the playoffs. So I think it's important for the Bruins to, you know, probably post complete showings and just see how they stack up against these teams before they get to the playoffs. But you also have to have that skepticism, right? Of like, all right, one, you know, Carolina's once again the second leg of a back-to-back. Again, the Bruins, I think, are still more focused inward in terms of sorting out their own issues, power play, staying healthy, getting guys up to speed, more than like looking at these games like, all right, we got to beat Tampa again to know we can beat them. Like, the Bruins are the best team in the league. They're on pace for, you know, a record setting amount of wins. I think they're very cognizant and confident of their own abilities. But that being said, like, you still want to at least have a good performance, or at least have positives to build off of these teams that almost surely you're going to have to go through in the playoffs. And especially, I think, probably that Carolina game. Again, it's tough when you're the second leg of a back-to-back there, but a strong showing there, or especially a win, I think would just be good for this team in terms of showing that you can go into Carolina, into Raleigh, and win. Like, again, that's not a sign of things to come if they don't post a win there. But I think just for there, when you look at how much that arena was a house of horrors for them last year, a good showing there should, you know, allow them to build a little bit more momentum as they start looking ahead into the playoffs and where they're probably going to have to go through if they want to get to a cup.
There's three things I'm looking for. Number one, as you said, complete game. You know, can you just put a full 60 together against two good teams, or just one of them? I mean, can you, you know, just do it? Again, we don't need to be convinced of it, but I think it's helpful considering, you know, the game against Montreal on Thursday, there were some tough parts. There were some parts that weren't so great. Power play, continuing to kind of put that together and do what they've been able, you know, what they haven't been able to do recently. But then you hit on it there. Going to Carolina on the second leg of a back-to-back. Like, to me, that is a tough spot. Adversity is kind of a cliche word, but that's not ideal conditions. You know, that's not how you want to be going into Carolina. Steal a win. Pull out a win. I don't know. That'd be interesting. Keep it interesting at the end of the season. Other than that, unless someone gets injured, I'm not putting a lot of stock in those two games. I'm not. Yeah. If they lose both, I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, you know, this changes my opinion of them. No, it's the end of March. Like, you know, we'll get to the playoffs, see how it is there. But I'm not, you know, I hope to not see people freaking out on Twitter, but I know that I will. And that's okay. That's why we love our Bruins fans. They are a passionate bunch. But I don't think there's reason to freak out. Now, if they like lose both games 7-0 and throw up all over themselves and like three people get injured, well, then yes, you have a reason to freak out about that. But if it's just, you know, two regular losses, I guess I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, you see that? You see that, Connor? I my opinions are changing on them. They're going to be out in the second round this year. But a little bit of a glimmer of hope. If Taylor Hall and Nick Foligno return, Connor, obviously a third line of Taylor Hall and Coyle and Bertuzzi would be quite interesting to watch. And Nick Foligno, his leadership and presence and him being old and bald, as Brad Marchand would say, would be welcome back on the Bruins.
Brad Marchand, who is legitimately 7 months younger than Nick Foligno, too. Like, that's, I feel like that's getting lost in the shuffle. But anyway, sorry.
It is lost in the shuffle. I feel like people don't really realize that they are fairly close in age. But who would be the odd man out in your eyes? Who would be the guys sitting on the ninth floor?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because it's kind of a testament to the Bruins in terms of just how stacked this lineup is. I mean, you could make the argument that like Nick Foligno would maybe have to earn to get a spot back, but I think of what he's brought this year in terms of especially that role in the fourth line, it's tough to sit him if he is healthy. It's, you're probably looking at Frederick, I think is might be who it is. Like, and again, that's, I say that and like, you know, I think people think that I'm saying that's like an indictment on Frederick. It's not, it's just like, again, Frederick, I think has exceeded everyone's expectations this year. Like he's physical. He's almost, I mean, he was on pace for like almost 20 goals. Like he's a great player. And like, it would be in the lineup for a bunch of other teams that are even are viewed as top contenders. But I think you look at if those guys are healthy, you know, Frederick, you look at where he doesn't get as much special teams reps. Like he's not replacing Nosek at 4C. Like Nosek's numbers on faceoffs and how good he's been defensively. Can't do it. Like he's too valuable for where he is in the lineup and what his role is. Maybe Hathaway, like maybe he fights for minutes against a guy like him, but still Hathaway's a guy that has more playoff experience. Like you can go back and forth. Like if you want to say Hathaway's,
you traded for him.
Go for him. Yeah, you traded for him. Like it's, and again, like I would probably say that means that Frederick is the odd man out just in terms of the face-offs, the, you know, defensive ability, the, especially just like the PK work. He hasn't had that many reps, but again, it's kind of the same thing we talked about in terms of like the defensive rotations. And if everyone's healthy, who's the odd man out there? Like there will be a guy that's the odd man out who's probably a very good player. That being said, in a long, you know, 20 plus games it takes to win a Stanley Cup, all those guys are going to factor into it in some way. Like we're not even talking about the fact that like, you know, Jakub Lauko is probably going to be the odd man out there as well. He'll probably make an impact play. AJ Greer, who like
might get
suspended. Yeah, who might get suspended as we're recording this. Again, he'll probably have an impact play at some point. You're going to have to draw on everyone to win a Stanley Cup. So it's not to say that Frederick is going to be just like buried on the depth chart if he happens to be the odd man out. And again, they could go in a variety of different ways there. But for the Bruins, it's a good problem to have. And I think just a testament to how deep this roster is that a guy like Frederick, who's been fantastic all year and he exceeded so many expectations, could be the guy that is the odd man out there.
Also, Lord knows if Foligno even comes back. Like, that's another thing.
Yeah,
right?
Again, like, that is also the case, yeah.
Yes, but I agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, a third, obviously, if Taylor Hall comes back, I think Frederick comes off that third line, and you try to make Hall work with Bertuzzi and Coyle. And then that fourth line, again, I mean, I like, you know, if Foligno did come back, Foligno, Nosek, Hathaway, I think that's a very safe bet. But I also think, again, if Foligno doesn't come back, you know, if you wanted to do Frederick, Nosek, Hathaway, that's a pretty damn good line. That's tough on defensemen going back for pucks if Frederick and Hathaway are coming down on you. But we'll see what ends up happening with that. All very interesting stuff, which we will have you covered on, as we always do with all these topics. Connor, what can people look forward to from you over at Boston.com and the Boston Globe?
Yeah, we're going to have you covered every step of the way, of course, with game recaps, features, columns, breakdowns, all of that good stuff. We had a long breakdown story talking about Hampus Lindholm's Norris odds, that I enjoyed writing about. So we'll have more kind of those deep dive stories as we get close to the playoffs and try to trudge our way through these final weeks of the regular season. So again, we'll have all that stuff over at boston.com and of course the Globe, not just Bruins. Obviously we cover everything in Boston sports. So Patriots off season, Red Sox opening days right around the corner, Celtics getting ready for the playoffs, everything we have over there as well. And again, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at @ConnorRyan_93.
I must say, Connor, those Red Sox ticket prices are looking mighty cheap in comparison to the Celtics and Bruins, which is very nice, I must say, for the beginning of April, which will be very, very fun. Anyways, Connor, as always, great job. Make sure to go subscribe to New England Hockey Journal if you haven't already. That's Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky. You poke the bear listeners. Whoa, said Bruins beat, but you poke the bear listeners. Have a great rest of your week.